before we actually begin, let's take a moment and cultivate our motivation. And so let's realize and feel the preciousness of the opportunity we have this evening to listen to and contemplate the Dharma. And let's make a strong determination to use this opportunity wisely and to use it in an expansive way. In other words, to learn the Dharma, not solely for our own benefit, but so that we can make a positive contribution to all of society, and so that we can progress on the path to full enlightenment for the purpose of being of greater and greater benefit to all living beings. So take a moment and cultivate that motivation before we actually begin. And then come out of your meditation, open your eyes. So we're going to talk a little bit about some practical aspects of the Dharma and how to practice in our daily life. First thing, I think, is learning how to wake up correctly. You're going to go, wake up correctly? I know how to wake up. I roll over and turn the alarm clock off and go back to sleep. Yeah. Well, that's not exactly it. Okay. When we first wake up in the morning, it's very helpful, actually very important, to generate our motivation. Yeah. And to really think clearly about the day ahead. Not in all of its detail, but so that we know what's important in the day ahead and we set our intention properly. So if you think about it, what's the most important thing that you have to do each day? Or maybe put it this way. Let's say when you wake up tomorrow morning and you think, what's the most important thing I have to do today? Now, what kind of thought comes in our mind? Usually something like eat breakfast, go to work. You know, this kind of stuff. But if we really think about it, I think the most important thing we do each day is not to harm others. Would you agree? You know, that's kind of a bottom line. No matter what else happens in the day, the most important thing is not to harm anybody. So it doesn't matter if you get your projects done. It doesn't matter if you pass your exams. You know, doesn't matter if you have a good time or a bad time. Bottom line for a successful day is to not harm others. This is looking at our life in a little bit different way than we usually look at it. Because we usually wake up in the morning and we have, oh, I got to do this, and then I got to do this, and go here and do that. These are all very important things. And we have our whole list. But actually, all of those things, if we do them, that's nice, but if we don't do them, nothing that terrible happens. But if we harm somebody, that's not so good, because somebody else suffers, and then we also create negative karma, which harms ourselves. So most important thing is not to harm. Then the second most important thing, it's not just one most important, is as much as possible to be a benefit to others. So this can be in small ways, taking out the garbage, okay, helping somebody carry something. There can be, you know, small ways to help others. There can also be big ways to help others. But, you know, again, no matter whether we get our list of activities done in a certain day, I think how we do them is the most important thing, and specifically if we're able to benefit others in the various activities that we do during the day. And along that line, many of us feel, oh, benefit others, gee, many, I have to be some great sage or saint or somebody to benefit everybody. But not actually. You know, I think there's all sorts of things we can do just as we go through our life that are acts of kindness that benefit others. I'll list one. I don't know if you'll agree with this. What about when you're driving and someone needs to change lanes and you let them in? Isn't that an act of kindness? Can you do that? Oh, no. Nobody's going to get in front of me on the road. No way. But think about it. Isn't it an act of kindness letting somebody come in and let you know they need to change lanes? Okay. Or you're on the bus and letting somebody sit down if they look tired. Okay, so there's all sorts of things that we can do that actually benefit other living beings. So to keep that in mind and be on the lookout for ways to be a benefit. And then the third most important thing to do in the day is to have a long-term motivation. And by long-term motivation, I don't mean till the end of the month, okay, or the end of the year, or even the end of this lifetime. But to have a long-term spiritual motivation so that we have a framework for how we're living our life. Okay? In other words, there's some paradigm, there's some meaning, some purpose that we have to our lives. And so from a Buddhist perspective, the long-term meaning in our life is to attain liberation from cyclic existence and to attain full enlightenment so that we can be of the greatest benefit to all living beings. And so to remember that each morning that we wake up, that our life does have some long-term meaning and purpose that goes beyond this life, that goes beyond whether we get our way or not today, but has some long-term value in terms of benefiting sentient beings in the most expansive way. Okay? So by waking up in the morning, and even before you get out of bed, generating these three motivations, you know, today is not as much as possible, I'm not going to harm. Today as much as possible, I'm going to be a benefit. Today I'm going to hold my long-term motivation of aiming for liberation and enlightenment for the benefit of beings. Okay? Then you get out of bed and brush your teeth and whatever. Okay? But, if you really try to do this continuously in your life, setting the motivation, it'll have a very profound effect on how you live the rest of your life and how you feel about yourself. And what your mood is, okay? Because if you wake up in the morning and it's like, oh, most important thing today is I got to finish this project for my boy, my boss, and then I got to go pick up the kids, and then I better get something for dinner, and then I better, clean the house, and then I have to plan the next day at work, and then I think maybe I'll find out some time in there to collapse because I'm so tired. And have to have some time to complain as well. That's my hobby. If we have that kind of thought going through our mind when we wake up, then that's how we live our life. You know, or if we wake up today thinking, oh no, I have to meet this awful client. Ugh. You know, then if that's your first thought, that's how you're going to live your life, you know. Or if you wake up today and you think, oh, I get to see my boyfriend today. I better dress up and comb my hair and look nice, you know. Then that's how you're going to live your life. But if you really wake up and think, okay, I'm not going to harm others. I'm going to benefit them. I'm going to have a long-term spiritual meaning for my life. Then that really does change how you approach each day and how you feel about yourself and how you interact with others. And then during the day, try and come back to this initial motivation as much as you can. So it's good to have something that happens frequently during the day that can kind of be your little trigger to help you remember your motivation. If you are riding in a car all day or riding in a bus, have a stoplight be your trigger so that whenever you're at a stoplight, you come back and you recall your three motivations for the day. Okay? Or if you're around the telephone a lot, Singaporeans are around the telephone a lot. Oh, you can't talk to anybody. Ring, ring. Oh, hello there. I just talked to you 5 minutes ago, but I got to talk to you again. Bye. You know, and then you're trying to talk with your friend, then ring. Oh, you again. Yeah. I'll do that. Bye. Oh, yay. You know, you can't talk to anybody. So anyway, if you really insist on answering your cell phone all the time, then at least think about your virtuous motivation before you do, okay? And use that as a trigger to think something constructive. And you might sometimes think of turning your cell phone off, too, so that you can really talk to the people that you're with. Yeah. Have you ever noticed that people spend most of their time talking to people they're not with, arranging times to meet the people they're not with, and then when they're with those people, they're on the phone again, arranging with other people that they're not with to meet those people? Doesn't make much sense to be together, does it? Yeah. So you might just consider turning your phone off and really being with another human being. Okay. Anyway, that's my soapbox. In the U.S., we have an expression that when there's something that you feel very strongly about, you stand on a soapbox and you tell everybody. So, cell phones is one of my pet peeves. I can tell you some of my others, too. Anyway, you know, really using something to come back to your motivation. One woman told me that what she used to come back to her motivation again and again was her little child going, "Mommy." You know how little kids do that? Yeah. Mommy. Yeah. So every time your child cries out for you, that becomes your time to remember your motivation to benefit all living beings and not to harm them. Okay? Or eating and drinking is another way to do that. So you make it part of your practice to offer your food or do some kind of prayer each time before you eat and drink, instead of just being on automatic when you consume something. So that's a very nice way to keep coming back to things. At Srivasti Abbey, where I live, and at many monasteries, this is commonly done, you know. When you sit down before breakfast, we do some various chanting and offering of our food, and I give a very short Dharma talk, and then we eat. And similarly, before lunch, we do some prayers and contemplations, and then we eat, and then we do some other recitations after the meal. So this is a very nice way of, again, coming back to your motivation and bringing the Dharma into your daily life activities. Yeah. If we don't do this, if we don't offer our food to the three jewels before we eat, then we might just resemble how animals eat. Okay? You know how animals eat? Ever had a dog or a cat? You know, you put the food down and like, you know, one slurp and it's done. And have you ever noticed that some people eat that way as well? It's as if they inhale their food. And within 30 seconds, it's gone. Yeah. Or have you seen people sometimes at a cafeteria, and you know, where you choose your dishes, and before you get to the checkout where they add it up and tell you how much you owe, the person's eaten half of it? Yeah. So we do this, and we often do it just so much on automatic. We're not thinking about what we're doing or paying attention to it. So if you use, you know, eating or drinking as an opportunity to just pause and offer your food and, you know, do a short contemplation, it really helps center you spiritually and emotionally. That doesn't mean that when you're, you know, in the middle of a restaurant with your friends, you go, okay, everybody, be quiet. I'm going to offer my food. And then you sit there in the middle of the restaurant going, to the Buddha, the Dharma, you know, and everybody's looking at you. No, it doesn't mean that. Yeah, I've developed a technique where you just do your offering prayer to yourself, and you let the people you're with continue to talk or whatever, or you just sit quietly if you're alone and you know, do your recollection, and doesn't bother anybody, but it's a very good way to center yourself. And then when you come home from work, yeah, when before you open the door to your home, instead of just kind of opening the door, you know, it's very interesting. How do you come home from work? What do you do? Do you just kind of open the door and throw your stuff down and collapse on the couch? What a hard day at work. Turn on the television, turn on the computer, turn on the iPod, turn on all of them at once. You know? And then you just sit there and veg out. And you call that being alive. Okay? And then a family member comes in. Yeah? And your family member says, hello. And you're going, yeah. You know? And then your kids come in and go, hi, Mommy, hi, Daddy. You know, it's like, look at how we relate to the people who we live with sometimes. You know, it's really as if we live on automatic, like we're automatons. And we treat other people like automatons instead of, you know, really looking in people's eyes and caring for them and cherishing them and seeing, you know, this very moment I have with this living being is something precious. Instead of just taking it for granted. So it can be very helpful before you open the door of your flat to just stop and think, you know, I'm going home and I'm going to see the people that I care about and how fortunate I am to have these people in my life. And again, with my family, I'm going to try and be kind and not harm them, to benefit them, and to remember my long-term motivation. Okay? So you can do this very, you know, you don't need to make a big production out of it before you go home. But if you really set your motivation before you go in the house, your relationship with your family is going to be different. Yeah, you don't need to tell me you don't have any time. I've stayed with Singaporeans. I know you have lots of locks on your doors. Yeah? You know, today you peel this key for this one, this and bolt and this and that. And, you know, the outside gate and then the inside one and then the bolt and then, oh yeah, yeah. So you have lots of time to generate your motivation while you're unlocking all the locks. Yeah, don't tell me there's no time. You can sit there and think about your motivation while you're unlocking the door. You know, it takes 5 minutes at least. Nearly, anyway. So these kinds of things can be very helpful in your life. Yeah, when you first wake up in the morning, when you first get out of bed, imagine the Buddha and make 3 prostrations. And right before you go to bed, imagine the Buddha and make 3 prostrations. It's a very, very nice way to start and end the day, you know, because you begin by really thinking of the Buddha, you know, and end the day thinking of the Buddha and the Buddha's qualities and how fortunate we are to have met the Buddha's teachings. Yeah. If you're somebody who has taken refuge in the 5 precepts, in other words, if you're an upasaka or an upasika, when you wake up in the morning, think, oh, I'm so fortunate that I've taken refuge in the 3 jewels. I'm so fortunate I have the 5 precepts. Yeah? So begin the day really rejoicing that, you know, you have the Buddha Dharma in your life as an incredible refuge and support and protection for you. Yeah. So what I'm getting at is that it's very important that we kind of take charge in of our lives and of our thoughts and really deliberately guide our thought processes in productive ways. Yeah, by setting our motivation, by remembering our fortune, at the end of the day, by dedicating the merit. Yeah? Because all these things actually help us to tune into our life instead of just being so busy that we become like automatons. Mm-hmm. Okay, another practice to do during the day that I think is quite helpful is, to be aware of what is going on in your mind. Okay? What am I thinking? What am I feeling? So this is a very good practice, but from the time you leave your house in the morning to the time you get to work or school or wherever you're going, some time passes. Are you aware of what you're thinking during that time? Yeah? Try an experiment, and every time you arrive somewhere, try and remember what you were thinking about the whole trip getting there. Sometimes it's like we have no idea. We were total space cases. Yeah. Yeah. Our mind was busy. We had a human mind, a human life. No, but we can't even remember what we were thinking because we weren't aware of it. Because we were just letting our mind go here and there and everywhere. So while you're traveling, while you're doing different activities, try and be aware of the thoughts that are in your mind, and also try and steer your mind to constructive and realistic thoughts. And if, as you're being aware of the different thoughts in your mind, also evaluate them and see if they're realistic, see if they're beneficial. No? Because, for example, the example I gave at the beginning of the talk of waking up and then you think, I have to meet this awful client today, you know. Oh, I know what it's going to be like. This jerk is going to do this and then he's going to do that. You know, then you go on and on with all your dread. Now, is that a very realistic thought? Now, superficially, you're going to go, oh, yeah, it is, because this guy's really a jerk. But think about it a little bit deeper, you know. Is it really realistic? Do you know exactly how the encounter with that person is going to be? Do you know? We don't know. And if we have a dread of meeting somebody and we've already convinced ourselves that it's going to be really an awful thing meeting this person, then we're going to act in such a way as to make it awful. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Whereas if we're able to notice that we have this negative way of thinking, and then we notice that and we put it down, and we start to generate consciously another way of thinking, then when we meet that same person, we'll have a totally different experience meeting them. Okay? So like I said, if you're sitting there thinking, oh, I gotta meet this guy, ugh, you know, then for sure it's not gonna be nice. But if you realize that you're already planning this bad encounter, then stop yourself and say, I have no idea that this is the way the conversation's going to go. You know? And then question yourself, is my bad view of this person something realistic or not? Okay. Now again, your superficial thought will go, oh yeah, he's so quarrelsome. I have very realistic thought. But, you know, think about it a little bit more deeply. You know, is somebody always quarrelsome? Is somebody always difficult to get along with? No. Everybody has some faults, but everybody has some good qualities too. Maybe if we gave the other person a chance, there might be the opportunity to have a good relationship with them. If we gave them the chance, instead of being so full of our preconceptions that we make the bad situation happen. Okay? But instead of, you know, developing this hard image of this other person and what they're like, to step back and just say, oh, okay, here's a sentient being who wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. Yeah, so instead of looking or thinking about that person and going, oh, he's quarrelsome and he lies and he does this and he does that and he does the other thing. Instead of doing that, stop and think, oh, here's another human being who wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. I wonder what it's like to be this person. I wonder if they're happy. I wonder if they feel content inside, if they feel at peace inside. If there's somebody who has trouble with their anger, maybe they don't always feel very happy or peaceful inside. Is there a way that I can contribute to their well-being? Is there a way when I meet this person that I could smile at them or engage them or do something that might uplift their feeling? That might make them feel like a worthwhile person. Okay? So before you meet people, try and think about them in a positive way, or at least think of them as a living being who wants happiness and doesn't want suffering, and then relate to them in that way. You know, and think, what can I do that could contribute to their life? And then you might think, well, oh, I could offer them a cup of tea, or I could bring them some biscuits. Yeah. So instead of, you know, setting your mind up for having this bad interaction with somebody, try and go to the interaction prepared to be kind. You know, get something, a little gift for them, just something small and give it to them, or smile at them, or, you know, reach out and be friendly. And you'll be surprised how much your relationships with other people change if you make an effort to do that. One of my friends is a journalist, and he was working in the U.S. for NPR, that's National Public Radio, and he was working at the office, and there was one other man in his office who he was sure didn't like him. because for as long as he had been working there, that man had never spoken to him and had seldom made eye contact with him, even though they worked in the same office and they passed by each other during the day. They just kind of mutually agreed to ignore each other. So my friend was sure that this other guy didn't like him. After a while of coming to the Dharma class and hearing me say the kinds of things that I just said to you, then Peter decided, that was my friend's name, he decided he was going to try an experiment. So when he went to work, the next time he and that other guy were passing, he stopped and looked at him and said, "Hello." And the other guy said, "Hello." Can you believe it? And they stopped and talked. You know, these people who had never talked in months stopped and talked. And as they were talking and having this discussion, the other guy tells Peter how much he appreciates the various shows that he does and that he does very nice interviews. And Peter was so surprised because he had it in his mind that this other guy just didn't like him at all. But that was because he had never even bothered to talk to him. He had never bothered to give him a chance. Yeah? So, you know, you might find situations like this if you just make just that extra tinge of effort to reach out to somebody, you know, to really cherish other beings instead of treating other beings as just fixtures or, you know. Well, it's kind of like that, isn't it? You know, so often in a bustling city, we look at the strangers around us. I was asking about this I was leading a discussion one time about this, and one woman said, "Oh, a stranger is one less person's problem she needs to worry about." You know? In other words, it was almost as if, oh, a stranger isn't even a human being. They don't have feelings. They don't have problems. They don't have feelings. They don't feel happiness. They don't feel suffering. They're just one more person, you know, taking up space on the on the bus, on the MRT, on the sidewalk, wherever, you know. But what about, you know, when you're walking through the city, really being aware, wow, here's all these other sentient beings. You know? And we've all been in cyclic existence from beginningless time. And they've been kind to me while I've been in cyclic existence. Yeah, even the people I don't know, they've been kind to me. And, you know, because we may not know them this lifetime, but we've known them in previous lifetimes. And these people here who I'm walking by, you know, I might meet them in another situation in this life or future life and again receive kindness from them. Yeah. So they're real live human beings with feelings. Okay? And so we tune into them like that. Yeah? And so this way of thinking when we see various strangers is a very good antidote to the judgmental critical mind. Do you know the judgmental critical mind? Yeah? The mind that, you know, just sits and looks at somebody and goes, "Oh, that person's old. Don't want to talk to them. Oh, there's a screaming baby. Can't talk to them. Oh, there's somebody. He looks kind of poor. You know, not some same socioeconomic class as me. I'm not going to talk to that person. Oh, there's that guy. Yeah, he's been doing some construction work. He looks kind of dirty. Don't want to go near there either." You know, and so we just start looking at everybody and forming so many opinions about everybody just based on what they look like. We know absolutely nothing about them, but that doesn't stop us. We have opinions anyway. And then the problem is we don't question our opinions. We think our opinions are true. and when we act as if our opinions are true. And we cut ourselves off from the opportunity to really connect with others. And in the meantime, we just fill our minds with unrealistic thoughts and lots of thoughts of, you know, judgment and anger and jealousy and competition. Okay? So if we really practice during the day noticing what our thoughts are, and we see that we're starting to fall to that kind of judgmental mind, then we stop ourselves and then we consciously start practicing seeing other people as, oh, this is a living being with feelings. This is somebody who in a previous life has been my mother and been kind, and in a future life will be my mother and be kind. Or see somebody, this is somebody stuck in samsara under the influence of ignorance and karma, just like me. Wow. You know? And start focusing on everybody as being, you know, a victim of their own ignorance and mental afflictions and karma. So there's so many different ways that we can practice looking at the different people that we encounter in a daily way. And it doesn't take a great deal of effort, you know, it's only your thoughts. You don't have to, you know, move a huge pile of bricks or something. You just change the way you think. And, you know, in that way, by doing that, you can change your way of thinking from a negative way that creates negative karma and makes you unhappy to a realistic way that really helps deepen your understanding of the Dharma and leads you to a lot of inner wisdom and inner satisfaction. So this is completely within our power to do on a day-to-day basis. We just have to slow down enough and pay attention and start to do this. I travel a lot, so I'm often in airports. Yeah. Airports are not fantastic places. Yeah, and sometimes airports are incredibly crowded and people are just rushing past each other. But I find it very helpful when I'm, you know, trying to get to my plane or whatever, walking past all these different people, to generate some kind of Dharma thought about them. And so I often think, oh, my enlightenment depends on this person. You know, this person, this one person walking by me right now is... their happiness is why I am practicing the Dharma. No? Because every day we say, oh, I want to practice the Dharma for the benefit of all living beings. Well, all living beings means each and every specific individual, which means I'm practicing the Dharma, you know, because I'm in relationship and care about each specific individual. Yeah? So this person, you know, walking by me with their, you know, their hand luggage, you know, that I have to jump to avoid getting hit by, you know, to think, oh, my enlightenment depends on them. Because it does. You know, we don't get enlightened in a vacuum. We get enlightened in dependence upon cultivating love and compassion for all sentient beings. So that means love and compassion for this person, you know, or this particular screaming baby in the seat in front of me on the Trans-Pacific flight, you know. Yeah, the one that's been screaming for a while. My enlightenment depends on them. Yeah? And they're suffering right now. And can I generate a compassionate thought for them and for their parents? Yeah? Okay, so there's so many opportunities in our life to practice and to look at things in a Dharma perspective. Yeah? Singaporeans ride in elevators a lot. You don't like to walk in the stairs, I've noticed. Yeah. any Singaporeans that stay with me for a while learn to get some exercise. But, you know, when you're in the elevator, you know how we all get in the elevator and then we stand, we get in, we turn around and we look front and then we all look at the numbers. Yeah? And we all pretend like we don't know anybody else. Yeah. Yeah. But just, you know, stand in the elevator and think, oh, here are other people. Yeah, who want to be happy, who don't want to suffer, who are under the influence of their own mental afflictions, who have been kind to me. You know, my enlightenment depends on them. Then you're standing in the elevator and you, wow, you know, I mean, you're having this whole reflection on the Dharma in the middle of the elevator. And then, you know, because of it, you might even hold the open door, you know, press the open button when the door opens so that the other person can get out. Yeah. We usually, you know, the door opens and then we press close as quick as we can, you know. We don't care if they get bumped or whatever. But, you know, you see just small ways of changing how you think. It's going to change how you act towards people. Okay, so there's lots of these kinds of things. Yeah. And they may seem very insignificant and small. But, you know, our life is often made of a lot of small, insignificant things which become very big and very significant. Yeah? And so starting to change our life moment by moment can really have, you know, quite a force behind it as time goes on.